Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're digging into some really fascinating research, a huge 5-year project, actually. It aimed to figure out what really separates the good companies from the ones that become truly, lastingly great.
Right, and the big question they started with was, you know, can a company actually make that leap? Or are the great ones just born that way? Most people kind of thought greatness was predestined.
But this research really challenged that. They sifted through, what, almost 1,500 Fortune 500 companies?
Yeah, 1,435 initially. And they found just 11 that made this incredible transformation from good to, well, genuinely great. The G2G companies, they called them.
And great wasn't just a little better. We're talking about stock returns that beat the market by nearly 7 times over 15 years.
That's right. 6.9 times. Mm. I mean, compare that to GE, a fantastic company, which beat the market by 2.8 times. These G2G firms were just operating on a whole different level.
But the clever part, the real breakthrough, was how they studied this. It wasn't just looking at the winners.
Exactly. It was all about comparison. For each great company, they found a direct comparison, same industry, same chances that didn't make the leap, and they also looked at companies that had a quick success burst but couldn't sustain it.
So they could isolate what was truly different about the great ones.
Precisely. If both the great and the comparison company did something, well, then it wasn't the differentiator, was it? It got thrown out.
And that led to some pretty surprising findings right off the bat.
Yeah.
Things that didn't matter as much as everyone thought, like executive pay.
Yeah, that was a big one. There was just no clear pattern linking specific pay structures to making the leap. The data didn't back up the idea that fancy compensation was the key driver.
Which is kind of counter to a lot of business thinking.
It is, and strategy, too. It wasn't that the great companies had strategies and the others didn't. They all had strategies.
Okay, so it wasn't the existence of a strategy, maybe the type of strategy.
Yeah.
Or something else.
Well, we'll get into the thinking behind the strategy later, but the mere fact of having one wasn't the key. And another thing, these transformations, they often happened quietly.
Right. No big bang, no flashy announcement.
Mm-hmm. No name change, no launch event. For the people inside, it often felt more like turning a heavy flywheel. Slow, steady effort, not some sudden revolution.
Okay, so if it's not pay, not just having a strategy, not a big PR campaign,
yeah,
it has to come down to the leadership, doesn't it? And that's the first big concept here.
It is. Level 5 leadership. And it's completely different from the sort of celebrity CEO we often see.
How so? What did these leaders look like?
They had this paradoxical mix. On one hand, deep personal humility. Quiet, reserved, even shy sometimes. But on the other hand, an absolutely ferocious professional will. Intense determination.
Humility and will. That doesn't sound like the typical larger-than-life corporate savior type.
Not at all. Think Darwin Smith at Kimberly-Clark. The researchers described him as self-effacing, kind of awkward, avoided the limelight. Yet, this was the guy who made the incredibly tough, gutsy call to sell the traditional paper mills.
Wow, the core business.
The core, yeah. And bet everything on consumer products, going head-to-head with P&G. And he did this while fighting cancer, flying out for radiation treatments every week. That's humility plus unwavering resolve.
Okay, I see the contrast. And the comparison leaders.
Often the opposite. Huge egos sometimes got in the way, like Al Dunlap at Scott Paper, Rambo, and Pinstripes, they call them.
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
He came in, slashed and burned, got a quick stock bump, boasted about making $100 million for himself, and then the company's performance tanked shortly after. The focus was clearly on him.
Or maybe Lee Iacocca at Chrysler. He saved the company initially, which was amazing, but then...
But then, yeah, the later years seemed more focused on his celebrity, talk shows, commercials, his book. And during that time, Chrysler stock actually fell behind the market significantly. Level 5 leaders, their ambition is for the company first and always.
Like David Maxwell at Fannie Mae, who you mentioned retired early.
Exactly. Retired deliberately while things were great to ensure a smooth transition and avoid clinging on too long. And later, when his retirement package caused some political noise, he told his successor to give the rest millions of dollars to the company foundation. It was about protecting the institution, not his own wealth or legacy.
That focus on the institution, that rigor, it leads right into the next big idea, doesn't it? First who, then what?
It does. It's fundamental. Get the right people on the bus, and just as importantly, get the wrong people off the bus, then you figure out where to drive it.
But that sounds hard. Especially if you're in trouble, the instinct must be to fix the strategy now.
It is hard. Think about Maxwell again at Fannie Mae. They were losing $1 million a day.
A million a day.
every single business day. And what did he do first? Not strategy. He spent time interviewing, assessing his team, making sure he had the right people in the key seats. That takes incredible discipline when the house feels like it's on fire.
So the who comes before the what. And this focus on people, it's about rigor, you said, not just being ruthless.
Absolutely not ruthlessness. It's about being rigorous in people decisions. Mm-hmm. The comparison companies, they were the ones constantly restructuring and resorting to layoffs 5 times more often, actually.
5 times more. Well, wow.
6 of the G2G companies didn't have a single layoff in the 10 years leading up to their transition and through 1998. The rigor was in who they hired, who they kept, and who they promoted.
So what does that look like practically? How did they apply that rigor?
Well, a few key disciplines emerged. One, if you have doubts about hiring someone, just don't wait. Keep searching. Circuit City's CEO famously said they wouldn't grow faster than their ability to find truly great people.
Limit growth based on talent acquisition.
2, when you know you need to make a people change, act. Don't wait. It's unfair to the person who isn't thriving, and it's really unfair to your best people who have to compensate.
Makes sense. And the third one.
This one's interesting. Put your best people on your biggest opportunities, not your biggest problem.
Okay, that feels counterintuitive. You see a fire, you send your best firefighter.
Yeah,
right?
That's the instinct. But look at Philip Morris. Joe Coleman took his absolute top executive and put him in charge of the international division. At the time, international was less than 1% of their business.
Why do that?
Because Coleman saw it as their single biggest opportunity for future growth, not a current problem to be solved. The comparison companies tended to waste their best talent trying to fix dying parts of the business.
So disciplined people decisions lead to disciplined thought. That's the next piece.
That's the bridge, disciplined thought. And it starts with something they called confronting the brutal facts.
Okay, which sounds necessary, but maybe unpleasant.
It can be, but it's essential. And it requires this psychological duality, the Stockdale paradox.
The Stockdale paradox. Named after Admiral Jim Stockdale.
That's right, the Vietnam POW. He observed that the prisoners who didn't make it were often the optimists, the ones who thought, we'll be out by Christmas, and then Christmas would come and go.
Ah, so blind optimism can be destructive.
Exactly. The paradox is you need unwavering faith that you will prevail in the end. You absolutely believe you'll succeed. But at the same time, you must confront the most brutal, harsh facts of your current reality. It's faith and facts.
Holding both those things at once. Faith that you'll win, but clarity about how tough the situation is right now.
Precisely. And the G2G leaders built cultures where truth could be heard. They didn't have all the answers. They asked questions. Like Alan Wurzel at Circuit City, they called him the prosecutor because he just kept digging with questions until the real issue surfaced.
So it encourages debate, arguments even.
Heated debate, yes. At Nucor, managers would apparently yell and pound tables, but it was never personal. It was about finding the truth, the best answer for the company. And crucially, when things went wrong, like Philip Morris buying 7UP.
Which didn't work out well.
No, it was a failure. But they did an autopsy without blame. They analyzed what went wrong, learned the lessons, and moved on, without scapegoating.
Okay, so confronting the facts, however brutal, leads to clarity.
Yeah.
Simplicity.
Exactly. It forces you to simplify. Which brings us to the hedgehog concept.
Right. The fox knows many things, but the hedgehog knows one big thing.
That's the idea. Moving from scattered complexity, being the fox trying to do everything, to focused simplicity, being the hedgehog who knows what truly matters. The hedgehog concept is that simple core idea found at the intersection of three circles.
Okay. What are the three circles?
First, what can you be the absolute best in the world at? And equally important, what can you not be the best at?
Best in the world. That's a high bar.
It is. Second circle. What drives your economic engine? What's your key metric, your denominator, like profit per X?
Profit per X. Okay. And the third.
What are you deeply passionate about? What do you care about so much that you do it anyway?
Best in the world, economic engine, and passion. Let's take an example. Walgreens.
Perfect example. Phenomenal results, right? Better than Intel over the same period. Their hedgehog concept was basically, be the best, most convenient drugstores with high profit per customer visit.
Profit per customer visit, not profit per store.
That's the key. See, if they focused on profit per store, they wouldn't want to build another store nearby. But focusing on profit per visit meant convenience was paramount, so they could put stores really close together, even across the street from each other in some cases.
Like 9 stores in a mile in San Francisco, the research mentioned.
Exactly. It drove convenience, which drove visits, which drove overall profit. It seems simple, but finding that profit per X denominator was critical.
And it requires honesty about what you can't be best at, like Abbott Labs.
Right. They looked hard at the pharmaceutical landscape and said, you know what? We can't beat Merck at being the best pure pharma company. It wasn't their strength.
So they pivoted.
They pivoted their hedgehog. They focused on becoming the best at creating products that contribute to cost-effective healthcare. That led them to diagnostics, hospital nutritionals areas where they could be the best, and where their passion and economics aligned.
Okay, so you have the right leader, the right people. They confront the facts, find their hedgehog. How does this all come together?
It builds momentum. That's the final piece. The flywheel effect.
The flywheel. Not a sudden jolt, but steady pushing.
Exactly. Think of a giant, heavy flywheel. Getting it moving takes huge effort, lots of pushes. One push, maybe it moves an inch. 2 pushes, 3. You keep pushing in a consistent direction.
And eventually.
Eventually, it starts to build momentum. Then comes a point where its own weight helps it turn faster and faster. Breakthrough. That's what the G2D transformations felt like from the inside. Years of pushing then. Whoosh.
Like Circuit City taking 9 years of steady effort before the stock really took off.
9 years. It looked like an overnight success from the outside, but inside it was just relentless consistency. Pushing that flywheel turn by turn.
And the comparison companies, they didn't have this.
No, they often fell into what the researchers called the doom loop. Instead of consistent pushing, they'd lurch violently. Try a radical new program, then abandon it. Make a big, splashy, but ultimately misguided acquisition.
Like trying to skip the buildup.
Or bringing in a new leader who immediately changed direction, undoing whatever momentum the previous leader might have built. Constant change, restructuring, chaos. That's the doom loop. No sustained momentum.
It really paints a picture of 2 fundamentally different approaches. One, focused, disciplined, building momentum. The other, reactive, scattered, constantly restarting.
That's the core difference.
And thinking about this whole framework, level 5, first 2, brutal facts, hedgehog, flywheel of that, feels like it applies beyond just Fortune 500 companies.
Oh, absolutely. The principles are about building any kind of enduring great organization. Mm. A school, a nonprofit, maybe even aspects of your own work or life. It's about understanding the physics of greatness, if you will.
And that question of why greatness? The G2G leaders, it seems, were driven by something more than just hitting targets.
It came back to that passion circle in the hedgehog. They cared deeply about the work itself, about building something excellent and lasting. For them, the question, why be great, almost didn't make sense. If you're passionate about it, of course you try to make it the best it can be.
Okay, so let's recap the journey quickly. It starts with that unique level 5 leader, humility plus will. They focus on first who, then what, getting the right people. That team practices disciplined thought, confronting brutal facts via the Stockdale paradox to find their simple, powerful hedgehog concept. And they build results relentlessly through the flywheel effect.
That's the integrated framework. It all links together.
So as we wrap up, what's one final thought for people to chew on from all of this?
Well, maybe this. Beyond outright failure, perhaps the single biggest danger we face in business or life is being successful, but having absolutely no clue why. Being successful without understanding the underlying reasons. This research, this framework, it gives you the tools to gain that clarity, to know why you succeed so you can keep succeeding.
Success without clarity is fragile. That's a powerful thought. Thank you for walking us through this deep dive.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.